Please repeat after me. And whoever at the end of his life,
and whoever
and
at
whoever
the
at the end of his life,
quits his body remembering me,
quits his body remembering me,
remembering me,
and once attains my nature,
at once attains
my nature.
Of this there is no doubt.
Of this there's no doubt.
Okay, so if everybody could mute themselves.
Muting.
Translation again is, and whoever at the end of his life quits his body, remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this, there is no doubt. Purport. In this verse, the importance of Krishna consciousness is stressed. Anyone who quits his body in Krishna consciousness is at once transferred to the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is the purest of the pure. Therefore, anyone who is constantly Krishna conscious is also the purest of the pure. The word smaran, remembering, is important. Remembrance of Krishna is not possible for the impure soul who has not practiced Krishna consciousness in devotional service. Therefore, one should practice Krishna consciousness from the very beginning of life. If one wants to achieve success at the end of his life, the process of remembering Krishna is essential. Excuse me. Therefore, one should constantly, incessantly, chant the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Lord Chaitanya has advised that one be as tolerant as a tree, Toror Iva Sihistuna. There may be so many impediments for a person who is chanting Hare Krishna. Nevertheless, tolerating all these impediments, one should continue to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So at the end of one's life, one can have the full benefit of Krishna consciousness. Now, just give me 1 second, Prabhu. I just have to write something down here, put in my notes. Just give me a moment. Okay, thank you for being patient with me there for a moment. I didn't have a whole lot of time to study for this, so I'm just kind of putting this together. All right. So, Antakale Chamameva Smaran Mukva Kalevaram Ya Prayati Samadbhavam Yati Nasyatra Sangshaya. This, of course, is a very important verse from Bhagavad Gita. The essence of what we should be concerned about is what our next body is going to be. We certainly don't want to have another material body. Anybody who's come in contact with the absolute truth knows that this body is full of suffering. So why repeat the same thing over again? We'd have no idea what our next body is going to be. So Krishna is saying that anybody who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities, as soon as he leaves this material body, immediately he's transferred to the spiritual kingdom. So in the same way, he's saying in this verse, if you remember me at the crucial time, at the moment of death, then you will be immediately transported to that spiritual world. However, we are living inside of this body and mind. The mind can be our greatest friend, and it also can certainly be our greatest enemy. So the problem that we have to deal with is we have impure remembrances. Just like I don't know about other people, but for me, if I hear some song that I'm familiar with in the past that I just like cannot stand, that's the thing that I remember. You know, it's like it goes around in my head for days, this song that I just, you know, detest. And that's the thing that sticks up there. Whereas the things that I want to remember, I can't keep them inside of my head. I've had experience, for instance, let me preface like this, saying this. The reason why I believe the way this works, the reason why we remember things from our past that we don't even want to remember, it just sticks around in our head, is because we've heard or seen or been in contact with those things so many times, it becomes ingrained, instilled within us. And then as soon as we come in contact with an experience or a sense, a stimulus, it reminds us, and then it gets inside of our brain. So I, at one point, for example, I was trying to make a little bit of money, so I took a job at a vacuum cleaner place where they repaired and sold vacuum cleaners. And the owner, or one of the owners, was a very nasty mouth fellow. He would use four-letter words like they were going out of style. And after being in that kind of atmosphere for a week or two, you know, literally about like 2 weeks, all of a sudden I started to bring home some other kind of words. I mean, I wasn't saying the same kind of profanity he was, but still kind of slipping out, you know, like I'd lose my temper for no good reason. And then I would say something like, I would be surprised what to speak of my wife. So why was that? Because I was around this kind of association, and you just get barraged by it, and then you start to pick up that quality. That's what happens. The mind absorbs things that it's around. When I was in college, I took a refresher course on biology, and part of it was the study of plants. What's the study of plants called? Forget, whatever. Shows how much I remember, but anyway. We were studying plant biology, and you know, whenever you look at any kind of plant, because they eat through photosynthesis, if you look at a leaf under a microscope, most of the substance that a leaf is made up of is actually transparent. The only thing that's green on a leaf is these little cells, which are called chloroplasts, and they have a green pigment, which is called chlorophyll, whatever, anyway, chlorosomething. And so the chloroplasts are tiny, tiny, and then the rest of the leaf is transparent. But any kind of leaf or grass or whatever, it looks completely green to us. So why is it that our eye just picks up the green? It doesn't pick up the much larger substance, which is all the transparent stuff. It's because that is what is predominant, and that's what your mind picks up. So similarly, if we come in contact with something that stimulates our senses, then our mind latches onto that. Because we have so much stimuli coming in all the time, you know, our temperatures, the temperature outside, our breathing, you know, what we're touching, whatever. You know, there's just so many thousands and millions of things that are coming at us at one time. But what our mind finds enjoyable, that's what our mind latches onto. We were just hearing the other day in Mother Ermila's class, yesterday, right? Yeah, yesterday. Was it yesterday? Yeah. So she was speaking about Abhyasa Yoga, which is synonymous with sadhana, because it means repetition. We should all be purely in Krishna consciousness, but since we're not at that stage, we have to practice sadhana or Abhyasa. Abhyasa means repetition. By repetition, we will come to the perfectional stage. Now, in the Nectar of Devotion, verse 8, it says, the essence of all advice is that one should utilize one's full time, 24 hours a day, in nicely chanting and remembering the Lord's divine name, transcendental form, qualities, and eternal pastimes, thereby gradually engaging one's tongue and mind. In this way, one should reside in Vraja, Goloka Vrindavan Dham, and serve Krishna under the guidance of devotees. One should follow in the footsteps of the Lord's beloved devotees who are deeply attached to his divine service. Isn't that a beautiful verse? Okay, and so in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, since the mind may be one's enemy or one's friend, one has to treat the mind to train the mind to become his friend. The Krishna consciousness movement is especially meant for training the mind to be always engaged in Krishna's business. The mind contains hundreds and thousands of impressions, not only from this life, but also from many, many lives of the past. These impressions sometimes come in contact with one another and produce contradictory pictures. In this way, the mind's function can become dangerous for the conditioned soul. Students of psychology are aware of the mind's various psychological changes. So we all have this kind of an experience. Being sincere devotees, we go to Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita class, and we listen intensely, and then we hear from the speaker Krishna Katha, and it goes into our heart, you know, just like we were reading that verse from Lord Kapila Dev, that Hrit Karna Rasayana Katha. It's very pleasing to the heart and to the ear. And then we go away from the class very enthusiastic and enlivened. But then, sometimes within a very short time after we've heard the class or the lecture, we get mugged on the way. We get mugged by the material energy, and it steals away our mind. And then again, we're thinking in a materialistic way. So this is the function of the mind, because it's conditioned in such a way from not only this life, but for many, many past lives, that it has impure remembrances. So what I did is I pulled out three extraordinary verses from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 13, which describes the Hamsa avatar and his instructions to the four Kumaras and Lord Brahma also. So I wanted to read the translation to these three verses. It's canto 11, chapter 13, verses 34 through 36. So it's stated here, Hamsa avatar states, one should see that the material world is a distinct illusion appearing in the mind, because material objects have an extremely flickering existence and are here today and gone tomorrow. They are compared to be like the streaking red line created by whirling a fiery disc. The spirit soul by nature exists in the single state of pure consciousness. However, in this world, he appears in many different forms and stages of existence. The modes of nature divide the soul's consciousness into normal, wakeful, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. All such varieties of perception, however, are actually maya and exist only like a dream. Isn't that a nice verse? Yeah, so it's anybody who's a little bit older, like probably most of us listening in, you know, in our 50s or 60s, you look back in our lives, and it was really like a firebrand, you know. You just got this thing whirling, and before you know it, you know, it's like a streak. It's gone. You're like, what happened in my youth? What happened to all the years I put in? They just like disappear within a few moments only. So that's what this life is. Not only this life, but the living entities in this material existence have many, many varieties. We know there's 8,400,000 different species of life. So all these different bodies are there for the living entities' illusion to try and enjoy in this material world. Not only do we have the consciousness of our present body and mind, but we also have to deal with different stages of wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. So with all of those, whether we're thinking about that we're a certain type of designation by our body and mind or by different states of consciousness, it's all illusory, just like a dream. That's what it is. Then, Hamsavatar says, having understood the temporary illusory nature of material things and thus having pulled one's vision away from illusion, one should remain without material desires. By experiencing the happiness of the soul, one should give up material speaking and activities. If sometime one must observe the material world, one should remember that it is not the ultimate reality, and therefore one has given it up. Sorry. Anyway, by such constant remembrance, up till the time of death, one will not again fall into illusion. Yes. So I think this is really important in context of what we're reading right now. Anta kale smaran bhavam. If we can remember Krishna throughout our entire lives, then at that crucial time, at the moment of death, we will be remembering him and we will attain his nature. So then the last verse, 36, is just as a drunken man does not notice if he is wearing his coat or shirt. Similarly, one who is perfect in self-realization, who has thus achieved his eternal identity, does not notice whether the temporary body is sitting or standing. Indeed, if by God's will the body is finished, or if by God's will he obtains a new body, his self-realized soul does not notice, just like a drunken man does not notice the situation of his outward dress. My wife and I were watching something on YouTube some time ago. We were just really laughing because it was some people that had taken videos of drunks, especially in Russia, you know, just smashed. And they have no idea where they are. It's shameful, you know, like they don't know how they're dressed, where if they're on the street or what they're doing. That's a drunk man. He's completely lost his consciousness. So in a similar way, if we're absorbed in Krishna consciousness, we will not be aware, just like a drunken man is not aware of his outside of his body or what's going on, his shirt or his coat. So similarly, we won't be conscious of our shirt or coat or this material body, whether we go back to the spiritual world or we stay in this material world. We're simply absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So that's the point. Somehow or other, if we can remain in Krishna consciousness, then we will attain Krishna's nature. Now, it's interesting. I'm going to close up soon, so don't think I'll be talking too much longer. In this verse, antakale chamameva smaran mukva kalevaram. So once we give the body, then by remembering Krishna, then at that time, he will go to me. Ya prayati sa mad bhavam. So mad bhavam, that refers to Krishna's nature. So bhava. Bhava is the same word you would use for ecstasy. So why is that? Nature and ecstasy, it's the same word. Because there is another nature. Krishna says, parastasmat tu bhavonyo. That means that I have a higher, superior nature. Paras. Supreme nature. Parastasmat tu bhavonyo. There's another type of nature. It's not just what we see in this material world. What is in the spiritual world is Sat Chit Ananda. It is fully blissful, and that is our real nature. So Krishna says, Mad Bhavam, we will attain that nature. Sometimes when we say it's somebody's nature, he's just like that. That's his nature. So our nature is that of blissfulness, but as long as we're in this material world, it's achit, nirananda, etc. We don't have our original nature. We have a contaminated nature. So Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that therefore it is crucial that one remain in Krishna consciousness always. That's why from the very beginning of life, one should prosecute Krishna consciousness. It's so much easier that way. If children are trained in such a way that they'll be Krishna conscious from the very beginning, then they don't have to deal with the kind of things that we had to deal with, you know, after being the first years of our life through all kinds of sense gratification. If one takes immediately to Krishna consciousness, then it'll make a great impression, samskara, within his mind. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada points out this verse from the Shikshashtaka, Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarori Vasistuna, Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari, that if we can remain humble, just like the grass, or just like a tree, then we can always chant the holy name of the Lord. And as Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, that the Shikshashtaka prayers, they also correspond in some way to the different stages of devotional service. So this first coming in contact with the devotees of the Lord, one gets preliminary faith, and from that faith, it increases so that we want to get more of association with devotees, become like them, take initiation from the bona fide spiritual master, and then there the guidance of a great devotee of the Lord, then we start practicing bhajana kriya. So as far as I remember, this is what it's speaking of, this bhajana kriya, the regulated principles of devotional service, so that we can remember Krishna even at the time of death, that crucial time. So I am going to stop here. Right now it is 9:36. I just want to remind everybody that actually when we started doing Bhagavad Gita classes, we were only going to do them for a half hour. I don't know how it evolved to 45 minutes in 1 hour. But anyway, right now it's 9:36. So if there is any questions or comments, then please.
I have one. Hare Krishna. You know, I was glad I talked today to Mavi Urmula, and she sent me very nice excerpt from Prabhupada's Srimad Bhagavatam class in Geneva in 74. And it's actually like the hearing all the time that we have to chant without offenses and, you know, with concentration. And but here is like sorry for my English, forgetting words, higher, when we can go trying to, you know, keep Krishna more in our hearts. And I'm going to read it. It's just a four or five sentences. Prabhupada says, the Hare Krishna mantra chanting means keeping Krishna always within your heart. It is not expensive at all. You haven't got to make a very exalted throne for Krishna. You can imagine that. In my heart, I have placed now a very diamond throne, and Krishna is sitting. That is accepted. It is actually, it becomes. Even within the mind, you think that I have kept one diamond throne, very costly throne, because Krishna is coming. He will sit down here. That is not false. That is a fact. So you create such situation within your heart. Now Krishna has seated. Let me wash his feet with a Ganges water, Yamuna water. Now change his dress to a first class costly garments. Then I decorate with ornaments. Then I give him for eating. You can simply think of this. This is meditation. Svanta Sena Gadabrta. Svantas Sena Kadabrita. It is so nice thing. Anywhere you can sit down and think that Krishna is sitting in your heart and you are receiving it so in such a nice way. They are not false. They are also fact. it is so easy. So here is that if you simply carry Krishna within your heart, always in a very devotional service, exalted devotional service, and chant Hare Krishna and think of Krishna, wherever you will go, you will purify the whole place. Lecture Srimad Bhagavatam 1.13.10, Geneva, 74.
I remember that one.
Yeah, I can send it if somebody wants. It's not edited probably properly. Really, you can see, you know, that English at that time, Prabhupada's English. You know.
Yeah, that's really nice. Yeah, it's a wonderful lecture. Okay. So, if there's nothing else any would like to add, then I guess we could break for the evening. Anything?
The quotes from, sorry, Amatiti, please. Kundita Amatiti, do you want to say something?
No, go ahead. I was just thanking
you. No, I was just saying that. All right. Yes, I was just saying that the quote that Master just read was very, very, very beautiful, actually. And you know, I didn't actually think that we should think like that. You know, really sort of meditate on Krishna in our hearts. I think it's very beautiful, and one has to really consider such a meditation. You know, it's really nice. And also the quotes from Srimad Bhagavatam, quite fantastic. So I'm very grateful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay. Well, thank you, Prabhus, for your association, as always. Tomorrow, Mother Urmila is giving her class, the penultimate class, before she leaves for almost a year.
Oh, no. She's leaving after this? This last class?
Tuesday is her last class.
Oh, next Tuesday?
Next Tuesday is our last class, so tomorrow is an ultimate one. And I don't mind if somebody wants to ask her if she wants to do class while she's traveling, but I doubt if she'll say she can do it.
Anyway. Well, I'll sign a petition. Request. Humble request.
Who knows? Might work. Might help. We'll see. Okay, so... Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada.
Jai.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Jai.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.